Good evening, everyone, and welcome to ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. This is Jackie Salvitti and my fabulous co-host, Veronica Entwistle. Hi, Ronnie.
Hi, Jackie. How are you doing?
I'm fabulous. And you?
I'm fabulous, too, looking at a wonderful moon that looks almost full.
Yes, it is. It's fabulous, fabulous, fabulous moon. I've been outside.
Well, isn't that appropriate for the feminine?
Yes, it is. Yep, tonight's show, Healing Our Relationship with the Feminine. And we're going to talk about how the energies now support and cry out for the healing of our relationship with the feminine, with moms, sisters, women, the goddess, and our own feminine energy. And tonight's show is going to be interesting. I had asked the team if they would channel tonight's show, and they said, no, 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 we want you to do the show. We want you to do the show. And so then I found out why they wanted me to do the show. And so they're going to come in later in the show to connect with all of you.
How wonderful.
Yes, it is. And to love you all, if you're willing. And they will not force themselves on anyone. And for those of you who may be tuning in for the first time tonight, healing energies come right through the computer during the show right now. If you ask for healing, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, financial, you must give permission. And you may feel energies running on your body or whatever. And, you know, if you at any point feel uncomfortable, just say enough and they will stop. They don't want to scare you. That's never their intention. Certainly they don't. I always have to forewarn people of this.
Unless they want you to bring up the fear so they can transform it with you.
Well, you know, again, they're pretty careful about permission is everything with this. There is no intervention without permission. So, and, of course, your higher self is always the gatekeeper and your soul. Tonight's dedication, and I'd like to dedicate tonight to healing of the feminine without and within on the planet. Seems fairly appropriate, especially since the feminine has been up all week in almost every session. It has been showing up, and when that happens, it just kind of falls into my lap. Plus, we have the full moon, the spring equinox, and Easter all this week.
Mm.
So the energies have been really pretty, pretty powerful, but in a different way. You know, we've had all the chaotic stuff going on, you know, one minute this, the next minute that. We think we know what direction we're going in, and the next minute it changes. And so that's kind of eased off the last couple of days. So, you know, I just see this deep, deep thread of healing and looking at all of the damage around the feminine. And, you know, I see this very much as the Magdalene energy, the mother, the goddess. And for so many of us, male and female, who have all denied our true feminine, and so many of us went to the tough, powerful, you know, feminine, but there's more. There's so much more than this, and we've had absolutely no example for it. And we've all been, you know, really focusing, you know, all of us have, on healing the masculine, you know, the male chauvinistic paradigm. It's staring us in the face every day in the news. As we see it tanking everywhere, and certainly disclosures everywhere, anything having to do with this, the abuse of energy and of power. But this week what has been up, and I've been fascinated by it, is the repressed anger at mom, sisters, goddess, grandmas, aunts, you know, people that had, you know, mother roles in our life. And so, you know, it was fascinating to me through the sessions this week, because they've been so intense, watching what was coming up. And, you know, moms are supposed to love and protect us. It'd be an example. That's what we look to mom for. I mean, that's who carries us in the womb. But most of our mothers never did any of that. You know, now, this is not to say that you haven't had wonderful mothers. And, you know, most people would say, well, my mother was very loving or else she was mean. But it can catch us off guard because those that had mothers that, you know, they thought, well, mom was loving and she did the best she could. And so, you know, by nature, as children, we tend to be protective of mom. You know, well, I'm not going to pick on mama, let's pick on dad, you know. Dad was a butthead, let's get him. But mom, most mothers never gave us a role model for the true feminine. You know, it was a time on the planet, we recognize this. They didn't get it from their moms. I mean, seldom, certainly, Veronica, I'm sure you've encountered this. How many, you know, people have you ever run into that have said, gee, my mom was such a great role model?
Right. Well, I think also that paradigm shift was really strong between that generation and mine. You know. I know I'm older than you, Jackie.
Oh, what, by 2 years? And, you know, I'm not very good at generations because I married so young, so I kind of got lost in all of that.
Well, I think that there's a lot of the mothers who are right now between like 70 and 90 who were so held down and repressed that their behavior with their girl children was not exactly role modelish, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'm going to talk about my own mother later because it's really interesting how different she was. But with a feminine, what we've dealt with, you know, all of us, regardless of age group, is betrayal, competition, disappointment, emotional abandonment, or passivity. And so, you know, I'm going to talk about my own mother for a minute here because I think it's so interesting. My mother, and for those that know me, know this story. For those of you that don't, I lived in 13 foster homes, but I had a mother who I lived with off and on who was really outside the box. She was beautiful. She was tough. She was way ahead of her time. She lived in West Hollywood when it was really quite fabulous, right off the Sunset Strip. You know, she had a custom car. She was she did clothing design, all kinds of different kinds of design. She dated all the stars. She modeled for Frank and Joseph, which was a very famous hairdresser in Hollywood. They did all the stars. And later became a Christian Science practitioner, a healer. But she was always way ahead of her time. So she gave me a model. Now, you know, she was also one of the toughest women I've ever met. And, you know, I'm the movie Mommy Dearest, I could not watch for years without throwing up. I mean, that was who my mother was. She was Joan Crawford, and she looked like Joan Crawford.
Wow.
So I know that as a child, I made up my mind I was not going to be like her. You know, I didn't want to be mean. I didn't want to be, but there was also parts of her that potentially I could have denied in myself, which we do an awful lot of when we repress things about mom. We deny it. And so for most of us, we've lost our feminine somewhere in there. We deny it. We repress it because of our moms.
Even on the males, also have some version of this, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's a cute program on called Two and a Half Men. Mm-hmm. And this is my latest, you know, little sitcom that I record so that I can sit and giggle at night before I go to bed. I have to watch at least 30 minutes. And, you know, they have the very dominating, very, you know, Beverly Hills mom. And they both have horrible problems, both of the boys, the two sons, have horrible problems with women because of their relationship with mother. But
so we need to watch it as a lesson, eh?
Well, yeah, I hadn't planned on it, but that's what it turned into. And but we've lost our feminine. We denied it. We repressed it because of our mothers. We didn't want to be like them. So most of us had no defined way to be, to embody the divine feminine. And then so many others just plain rebelled. You know, I'm not going to be like my mom. I'm going to be different. And, you know, they threw the baby out with the bathwater.
Hmm.
The other issue, of course, is so many of us have not dealt with anger at mom. And, you know, this is what I have found really fascinating. Because Mom really didn't do anything to be angry at. You know, I've heard this over and over. Well, Mom was loving. Mom was this. Oh, she was a bit of a martyr or this or that. But it was never anything enough to really feel as though this is somebody who was holding power. And yet when we've gone back and done power retrievals with Mom, people have been fascinated by, especially this week, how much was really sitting there regarding the feminine. And
you know how much we blocked our evolutionary potential because of her treatment?
Absolutely. And, of course, there's always this issue where if Dad was abusive in any way or, you know, very tough, okay, there is always the issue of Mom, okay, not protecting. And even if they did step in to protect, it may have been too little too late. Mm-hmm. Many people grew up where Mom couldn't handle the children, and so, you know, the daughter had to take over and help raise the children. But there are all these issues. I mean, Mom carries you in the womb. You're going to get an imprint from Dad, and you'll get an imprint from Mom. But your imprint from Mom is the big one. I was reading something this week where they were talking about all of the American Indians were traced back to four different women. And I thought it was really interesting. They didn't trace it back to men. They traced it back to women.
Mm-hmm.
And because we've all been so focused on healing the masculine, you know, anger at men, at dads, brothers, husbands, boyfriends, I think we've all kind of failed to understand. I mean, I've dealt with all this because my mother was, you know, the biggie for me. But
she was also pretty colorfully, clearly the one.
Yes. But, you know, again, I send her gratitude every day because I recognize that she gave me, because she was so far outside of the box, a tremendous imprint, which may be why I chose her, you know, because she was so far outside of the box that it gave me the courage to be outside the box. I mean, I, you know, you'd have to go far. Of course, I ended up exceeding her in that respect. But
she was a slingshot, and out you go, you know.
So as women, basically, we've had to make it up as we go, trying to define what has been lost to us for eons of time on this planet. And, of course, this whole resurgence of the goddess that has come in. And Mary Magdalene, of course. A great representation of the goddess. Certainly with the Da Vinci Code, and, you know, before that, Lazarus, of course, has been working with the return of the goddess since 94. But for most people, they've been trying to define what has been lost to us for eons of time. And I think as women, trying to define what is the divine feminine. I mean, we've talked about it in other shows, you know, embodying the divine feminine and the divine masculine. But what the hell is the divine feminine?
Mm-hmm.
And so, so let's talk for a minute. And this is something that came up. One of my clients this week did a timeline. And they were going through the ascension flu, and they did a timeline. And I think this is so powerful, and I'll go into the reasons why later. But and they started doing a timeline of their life, all the things that they could remember from childhood going forward. First memories as a child and then moving forward. And they were overwhelmed at how much they had been through. Never realized what they had taken on in this lifetime until they actually did this timeline. Mm-hmm. And I really recommend this to everyone. I did this when the team first brought in the screens. For those of you who've had sessions, you all know at the end of the session, rerun the biological and emotional screens. For those of you who have not, these are actual screens. They were brought in for me originally when I first started this work to help screen out the emotional energies I was taking on from other people. Because at the end of the day, I would look like I was pregnant from all the emotions I was taking on from others. So they needed to be able to screen this out of me. And I asked, I said, okay, let's do something with these screens. Let's really go further with them. And so I laid down on the table one day, and I started doing a mental timeline of my life as they were running the screens. And as this mental timeline was running, I started just crying profusely, realizing how much I had taken on in this lifetime. So when this client had done this, it really brought it back to me. And it's really important for all of you to be able to do this, to realize that you've come in as transformers on this planet. And because of that, you have taken on a tremendous amount, everybody listening to this show tonight, far more than you realize. Because when you think about all of the things that you've taken on in this lifetime, you think about them as this situation, you hop over to this situation, you hop over to this situation, until you run a timeline and recognize how much you've taken on, everything you've been through, it won't trigger in you to the depths and the levels, which is where we really need to go right now, what you really set out to do. And it will help you get an idea of what you set out to do by looking at this timeline.
You mean sort of points a direction, your cellular direction?
It'll point a direction, and I would say the other thing is that it will help you to also really embrace your child and adolescent. You know, I would say when I did this, my love for my child, my honor for my child and adolescent, increased. I mean, they became my heroes. And I was doing a lot of work at this particular time, it was before I started this work, with my child and adolescent. And when I did the timeline, even before I did it with the screens, I realized how much they had taken on, and they became my heroes. And my commitment to them became so strong, which allowed me to integrate them, because I recognized that the only person that could go back and save them was me. The only person that they could count on was me. So that, A, they wouldn't be running my life, and B, that, you know, I felt like I owed them this. I looked at what they had been through. I mean, it, you know, if we think about it from the perspective of we choose what we're going to take on in this lifetime, okay? And then we come in and do it, and a lot of times that our child and adolescent kind of get lost by the wayside. But they went through this with us. They exist in time and space because everything is happening in this now moment. So let's go back to Mom for a minute. I hate to segue back and forth, but for many of you, as you look at Mom as you're going through the timeline, and you're saying, well, my mom was loving and she was wonderful, which is all great, but was she powerful? Was she a map maker? Did she own her power? Did she help you to see your power and show you how to take your power out into the world? And even if Mom was a bitch, which like mine was, she was a map maker. She gave me something. She gave me a map. It's not necessarily the map that I was going to do exactly like hers, of course. But I recognized that in choosing her as a mother, the things that she did do were a perfect setup for me to continue on with what I had to do.
So it's like a reaction force or something.
Mm-hmm. Now, it took me forever to get there. You know, I'm not going to say it happened overnight. Mm-hmm. Because I had to go through my period of rebellion, which I think so many people do. Mm-hmm. But this repressed anger, you see, is it doesn't matter how loving Mom was. If you weren't prepared to go out into the world and own who you are, okay, there's going to be some anger there. And I know some people are going to be listening to this and saying, well, that's ridiculous. Why would I be mad at Mom if she was loving to me? Because we're at a different time on the planet. And there's, again, how do you embrace the feminine? Who is your role model? And then, you know, did she protect you against Dad or whoever? Was she emotionally available? And, of course, the biggie, the big biggie, you know, did she prepare you for the world that you had to go out into? Now, Veronica, tell me about your mom, because I talk about mine a lot.
I was just thinking how I'm still angry with my dad because he didn't protect us from my mom. So that's kind of the reverse of what you're saying. And she was very, very angry and very, very suppressed. And she turned me out into the world with enough, again, back to the slingshot routine, enough rebellion to push out of what convention that she portrayed. She was very limited. She was very victimized. She was very angry, you know. So actually, I think that her greatest service to me, in many ways, when I was about 30, I realized that my deepest terror was that I would be like her, and I went, I am like her, but I'm going to take it all in different ways. So
good
I kind
you.
Of knew somewhere to run with some of her talents instead of fighting them really hard, move through with them. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, because we all have children who are rebelling against us. Certainly we all can look at our own children and see where their rebellion is.
Mm-hmm. And I think the rebellion is what pushes a lot of us out of the nest that is so kind of cloying or poisonous or however it is, you know. It's a good thing.
Yes, it is.
After 65, it's a bit much, don't you think?
Now, you know, and I want to say this to everybody. This is not about beating up our moms, okay? This is about being able to embrace your true feminine without rebelling or judging it as weak or wrong. And this is where we got on the wrong track sometimes, not everybody, but I think a lot of people did, in terms of, you know, we went through the bra burnings and all of the other stuff, okay? You know, wearing men's suits and ties and blah, 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 blah.
And not wanting to be like them. I remember that, you know.
Right. But to be the divine feminine, okay, we're talking about a kind of a combination, and I've talked about this before, of the Empress and the High Priestess having beautiful, strong boundaries and yet having our loving, embracing nature, you know, being fully empowered and loving ourselves without the rebellion, without the resentment, without the anger, you know, without the victim, being fully whole. And, you know, it's interesting to me how age has nothing to do with it, how many people, regardless of whatever age they are still carrying angst, so many of them, with parents.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have some clients well up into their 70s and 80s who have expressed that.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So let's kind of talk about Mary Magdalene here for a minute, because she came in very strong tonight, and I finally realized this is why they wanted me to do the show. You know, I never know anything until it happens. And because, you know, we're running up on Easter, and I'm so busy, I don't see this stuff coming, and then it all drops in my lap, and I'm like, oh. Mary Magdalene was the perfect example of the true empowered feminine. And this was suppressed and taken out of the collective consciousness so that there would be no powerful feminine role model for us. And it's taken almost 2,000 years to reclaim that peace. I mean, we had the Virgin Mary, who's going to model after that, and we had Jesus. But we were missing the empowered feminine. And this is why the whole Mary Magdalene thing, I mean, if you go on the computer and you search, it's fascinating to me how many groups and blogs and all kinds of things there are about Mary Magdalene. I mean, you know, there's buzz all over the planet about Mary Magdalene, finally. And she came in tonight, and I will, you know, in 1994, which was a very significant year for me, and it was all in preparation for this time, she started appearing to me, and I was like, oh, great. This is when I started really channeling, and I really didn't want to channel, and it was a very frustrating time because I was afraid somebody would find me wandering around for days in my house all by myself. And she would, it was interesting because she would stand behind me, and I'd turn around, and then I'd look down, and there would be a line of energy coming out of my stomach, and she would say, we have to go back and complete what we started then. And I'd say, what the hell does that mean? In my non-reverent way. And she would explain that was a seeding that took place, okay, for this time on the planet. Now, at the time, I certainly didn't understand the dovetailing in of off-planet consciousness and the lifetime of Christ. I mean, I had a sensing that he was not from here always, but I certainly didn't see it as clearly as I do today. And I will just share with you a session that happened this week. We did a session with someone, and we were in the second chakra, and all of a sudden she had a vision of Jesus in the manger, and she was shocked. You know, it was not what she expected to see. And now I get visions when all of this is going on, even though they're channeling, I'm still seeing things. And I could see that she was aboard ship, and which was fascinating. And they asked her, they said, where are you? And it took her a minute to acclimate. And she realized that she was aboard ship, which was perceived as the Star of Bethlehem. And she was watching from aboard ship this baby. And I just thought it was phenomenal because I've known this for a very long time, but it's the first time it's ever showed up in a session. Mm. And I thought it was very powerful, especially for this week. Now, I mean, with Mary, I mean, she continued on with me for years where she would superimpose over my face. I'd be talking to someone about spirituality, and they would, the look on their face when I'd look at them and go, oh, God. And they'd say, oh, my God, they're so, and they would recognize her. How they did, I don't have any idea, because it's not like there are pictures plastered all over of Mary Magdalene other than those that were painted far after her time. But she was very interactive with me for quite a long time. And I spent many, many years reading everything I could get my hands on and all the research about her life, because I knew that she was connected to Isis, which, of course, later I found, you know, all of this is surfacing. And I have channeled her. And interestingly enough, I've channeled she and Isis together, which was a phenomena to me. It was not one or the other. It was both at the same time, which I found very fascinating. Mm-hmm. But again, for all of us, okay, we have not had that model of the sacred feminine, the divine feminine, of the powerful feminine, because she was so misrepresented. And now we do have it. But, you know, they've been showing me all week long how tremendously important it is to go back and heal our relationships with mom, heal our anger, and get rid of our rebel. This is, it's just, it's huge. we can't get there without doing it. You know, in terms of being empowered, and I think this is also a real conflict for a lot of women, embracing that sacred feminine, because we've had such a struggle with what power means. And, you know, now you were far more involved in this than I was, Veronica, not because of our age, but because you were an activist. And, you know, so many of us gave our power, and you didn't do this, but so many of us gave our power away to men, including Dad, to try to earn love.
Oh, heavens, I did that too.
And we suppressed and repressed our power for fear that we would be too much. And then there are those of us who are simply afraid of our own power, afraid that we would be too much even for ourselves. And I think that this covers a whole lot of women. I think the fear of being so separate and this built-in fear that if we really own our power, if we really are truly as powerful as we are, that we won't ever have a man. And I've seen this for years, and I'm sure you have, Veronica, God, in your sessions, haven't you?
Oh, yes, for sure. But do you remember when you were young, people saying, don't be too intelligent, or you don't let them know how smart you are. You won't have a man. Men can't handle that. I remember actually being very conscious of that. No wonder so many women sit and simper and all that kind of stuff. And another very funny thing is I used to like wearing dresses when I was first married in the 60s. And my husband used to tell me that I was prissy and that I should be wearing jeans like the other girls and that I should go to these women's caucus meetings. So I went. I said, oh, I don't really want to go, so I'll go. So I went because he told me to. And I came back home and I said things like, so what exactly is a male chauvinist? And he described it to a T. And I said, oh, well, you are one. And he said, yes, but I'm a product of my environment. And and I said, oh, yeah, well, I guess I am too, but I'm not going to be that way anymore. And he said, you can't go to any more meetings. And it was hilarious because, you know, you can't go back, can you? Did you follow all that?
So, in other words, he wanted to tell you you weren't powerful, but as soon as you absolutely started taking your power, he stopped you from doing it.
Yes, and as soon as I went to the place he told me to go so that I would get powerful, yes, he said I couldn't do it anymore. I laughed so hard I almost fell on the floor. Cause, you know, how can you get them back on the farm now that they've seen Perry, right? The 60s were pretty interesting. We lived on campus in those days, so it was a very interesting time.
That's just incredibly funny.
It was funny, actually. Well, it still is. It's sort of breaking the shell over and over, breaking the shell.
Well, and in my own path, because I got into real estate, and we moved to Utah of all the places, and I was married to an Italian, and I was the first woman in commercial real estate. I was the first woman to own a nightclub. I was kind of the first woman to do a lot of different things in Utah. And I had an absolutely wonderful time because I was, in a way, a role model for so many women, including a lot of Mormon women.
Oh, that's great.
Well, I also was a rebel at the time because I took an awful lot of heat because, first of all, I was a powerful woman. And I was a successful woman. And I had all of these wonderful Mormon women who were very repressed. And I had, you know, I say pink, but they weren't. They were rose-colored Lincolns and, you know, all the clothes that matched. I did it just as a rebel thing. I was just having a whole lot of fun. And it worked. It was kind of one of those crazy things that worked. I got tired of people saying that I had to be risque or, you know, inappropriate because I was so successful. So I just said, oh, fine, well, I'll really give them something to talk about. And it backfired on me. I couldn't get rid of the damn cars. So the more outrageous I was, the more they ate it up. And the women loved me. And actually so did the men, but they would have to do it very quietly. It was very funny. And, you know, there was a place to me where the divine feminine was really, really repressed. And so I found it very, very interesting. Hi, we have a caller.
Jackie, this is Michael. I'm coming to see you tomorrow.
Yes, Michael.
I was just wanted to tell you I was listening and give you a little male perspective and let you know that right now, my time of my life, that women are my greatest teachers. And I think that when we balance that for all of us, it helps both sexes. And
oh, Michael, I love you. That's a wonderful perspective.
That's actually a wonderful thing to say, yeah.
I love you anyway, Michael. But Michael,
I always know that laugh.
You also embrace your feminine side beautifully.
Absolutely. Once we do that, we become better people, and then that allows us to be open to the greatness of what a woman is. And so, like I said, and you know, Jackie, my relationship with you and the things that I've just become since I've even met you and all our friends on the other side there. So. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow, and I just want to tell you, save some energy for me, darling.
And to all of you women out there, Michael's available, and he's fabulous.
I love you, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Love you, darling.
Bye-bye.
What a wonderful call.
Michael is a comedian, literally a stand-up comedian, and he's absolutely divine.
He's absolutely right, too, right? Eh?
Yes, he is totally right. And I want to just address two things here. One is the fear that so many women have that if they fully embrace the feminine, the true feminine, that they will never find a man. And I can tell you there are millions of people waking up on the planet right now.
Mm-hmm.
The men will be there, but you've got to show up first. You've got to fall in love with yourself. And we cannot deny our feminine any longer, the true feminine. And that means not the part that we've rebelled against. Look at, you know, do a timeline. Look at your relationship with mom. And heal it, whatever that takes.
Mm-hmm.
And I promise you, your mate is out there.
He might be too far out for some of them. They can't find him, it seems. Get in here right now.
Well, and I'm going to say this to you, and of course women don't want to hear this. The more you embody that feminine, because I spent years doing the rebel and the, you know, the outlandish and the body woman, B-A-W-D-Y, until I really found me, totally me. I make no excuses to anyone for who that is. This is me. I love me. I have learned to truly love me. When you reach that point, the interesting thing is the need for someone else in your life is not a driving force anymore. And the more whole you become, the less it becomes a driving force. That's when you can really allow it in, which I find fascinating, and I've had to move through this myself to really recognize it totally. And Veronica, you wanted to share some things tonight, too, about you had John Gray on as a host, and we were talking earlier.
And his new book is When Mars and Venus Collide.
Yes.
And he made mention, well, actually, a lot of his book is about the fact that the use of testosterone and oxytocin. I almost said Oxycontin.
Yeah, that's where I thought you were going.
Anyway, the woman's strong, our hormonal comfort level, which is oxytocin, where we feel really good and we love beauty and we're nurturing and we care for each other and so on. He says it's very undervalued in this society in the sense that women are now, like the men are doing their projects, they work their testosterone and when it gets restored, they do their projects, do their work, and then when they finish, they fall asleep or they go into their cave or they kind of drop their tension level, and it balances out the cortisol levels in the brain, which are the stress, or in the body and the
brain,
which are the stress levels. And the women, these days. We're living a lot of our life where we need our own testosterone. We're driven all the time. We're never off work, whether it's at home or out there. And he said that women are driven so much and are working so many long hours in so many aspects of their life. They're living on basically too much testosterone. And when we slow down and rest, our testosterone doesn't balance out, the cortisol doesn't get balanced out like it does in men. We need the oxytocin, which is what comes when you have somebody throwing their arms around you, or somebody romancing you, or somebody opening the car door, you know, or little gatherings with women friends, or, you know, softer things, that we really do need that in order to get back to the power of the feminine. And he was talking about how culturally our whole culture is troubled with this particular thing. He said women are sort of walking out of marriages and so on based on the fact it's all just too much stress.
But that makes absolute sense to me.
Well, and he put it in such a way that it's kind of logic. It's not some deep psychological confusion.
No, this is the wonderful information, Veronica, and I couldn't agree more. And it also brings up in my mind the... I happen to be very, very fortunate that I have wonderful women friends. And I mean wonderful women friends, a variety of them, you know, each one of them unique and funny, and yourself included, and I adore them all. And I feel incredibly blessed, but I recognize that a lot of women who are so driven today don't have the time or opportunity for their women friends.
And the thing is, it's fun, a lot of that part of it, it's really fun to be a woman and have girlfriends, but we just don't have enough time in our schedule anymore.
That, you know, can be, and I've been fortunate, my son's been here, so we've been making time to go play, and I have been enjoying it, there is no question about it.
And you feel better, don't you, when you do that?
Oh, absolutely, mm-hmm. giggle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of people are under a lot of stress right now. But, you know, going back to embodying that divine feminine, the quality of your relationships with women will change.
Mm-hmm. I believe
because
so.
You have nothing, there is no competition, there is no lack of safety in your relationship, because you become your own best friend. You're not looking for validation. You come to it as an equal, and you can be supportive and loving and to the other person totally, because you're not in that competitive mode. And, of course, we talked about this during one of the shows. I find it to be incredibly important for everybody, and I'm going to take a minute here and go into channel so that the team could come through and spend some time with everybody here.
Wonderful.
And so if you'll just give me a moment. All right. Welcome, everyone. Welcome.
Good evening. Hello.
Veronica.
Hello.
There you are.
How wonderful
to you are, dear friend.
Thank you.
All right. we wanted to take this opportunity tonight, and we did want the channel to do the show. It was important for her to share the information that she had to bring through. But we wanted to spend some time with all of you. This is a very powerful time on the planet right now. We would ask you all in the next several days to take this time and be quiet if you can. Not all the time. We're not asking you to go sit in some corner for 3 days. But take some time, quiet time. To feel the love. And tonight we're going to share love with you. We're going to touch each and every one of you in a moment. In whatever ways you're the most comfortable with. You see, as humans, the thing that you have the greatest difficulty with is love. It's not fear, it's not hate, it's none of that. It's love. You all talk about love. Oh, love this, love that, send love, send light. But when we talk to you about loving you, most of you, many of you, recoil for a moment. What? Love me? Yes. It is your greatest challenge not only to receive love from us, but to love yourself. Don't only take the quiet time. Take some time in front of a mirror. Just you in the mirror. All the mirror is a reflection, nothing more. And look into your own eyes. Look into your own soul. You've all come onto this planet to make a difference, each and every one of you. You are courageous beyond your imagination. And we can tell you that you are loved beyond anything. Anything in your human mind that you can imagine. You've never touched the love yet. Not really. This is why so many people, when they have a near-death experience, they don't want to come back. For the first time, they experience love without pain, love without condition. And they're so moved, they never want to return. We're going to give you a piece of that tonight, not because we want you to die, so please don't anyone choose to leave. We want to love you. Not to scare you, not to take your power, but to touch you. It's time for all of you to know, to believe. You are totally lovable. To love yourselves. To honor yourself. The channel talked about this timeline thing. We like this. Many of you, when you do it, you're going to cry. You're going to recognize how incredibly courageous you are. You've all been forging ahead. looking to the future. I'm here to make a difference. I'm here to make a difference. You are. You are making a difference. It doesn't matter if your book's not published or you're not giving seminars to 1,000 people or healing everyone you touch, because in a way you are. You're making a difference. You've made a difference from the very moment you came here. You just didn't know it. You were so busy trying to survive and playing out these incredible plans that you all had. And the quiet time we ask you to take is enough time to sit and love yourself. Appreciate yourselves for all that you've taken on, all that you've done. Notice we didn't say feel sorry for yourselves. Please don't do that. But with compassion and pride and understanding, love you. You're amazing beings. Amazing. All those that stepped aside so that you could come here were on the other side of the veil cheering you on. You just can't hear them. But they're there. They love you. They're proud of you. For those of you who are doing the self-talk, well, I haven't done enough. Yes, you have. We don't care if you're living in your car. Stop underestimating what you've done. All that you've taken on. Well, I could have been a better mother or father or this. Yes, you did the best you could with what you had. What you knew at the time. This is Earth, not an easy place. Forgive yourself, please. Lighten up, literally. Embrace all that you've accomplished. You can't get to where you want to go until you appreciate where you are now. The gap's too wide. Span too far. So let us take a moment, if you will. If you give permission, we will not do this without your permission. Let us touch you. Let us surround you with our love. Perhaps touching your third eye. Perhaps you'll feel the tickle in your crown. Perhaps your heart, throat, a brush upon your hand, or touch of a cheek. Maybe a word in your ear. Let us love you. Just for a moment. Because in that moment, your whole life can change. If you can let the love in. In a moment, if you can allow the love, unpinch the flow that the entire universe and multiverse has for you, your life could change. You you could take literally your finger out of the dike. Don't let us touch you. Allow the safety. There's nothing that you could do. Not one thing that would make us love you less. And not one thing that you could do that would make us love you more. We love you all, dear one.
Thank you.
And for those of you who wish, you may ask tonight when you go to bed to experience, perhaps in the dream state, a more direct connection. Veronica, we love you too, dear one.
We love you. Thank you so much.
Until we speak with all of you again, which will be soon. Namaste, dear friends.
Namaste.
Know that you are loved. Know that you are loved. Good night.
Good night. Blessings.